This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, in the midst of a pandemic and the consequent CMCO, it certainly doesn't help that large swathes of Selangor and KL are being affected by water supply disruptions. And this isn't an uncommon occurrence. According to reports, there have been 18 water supply disruptions in the Klang Valley between March and October.
Only two of these have been scheduled disruptions because of repair and upgrading works, which are normal. At least five incidents, however, are due to contamination of water sources, while the remainder are due to burst pipes.
So it's certainly ironic that the most developed area in the country suffers from frequent disruptions in water supply. So why is this the case, and what should the government be doing to address this? Now, that's the question that we're posing to S. Piara Parkaran, President of the Association of Water and Energy Research. Piara, thank you for joining us today. Now, why does Selangor and the Klang Valley suffer from so many disruptions, despite being the most economically advanced state in the country?
Well, that goes to the issue of overdevelopment, population density, and also the density of economic activities. So the population density difference between urban and rural area, urban is taking 75% and above, and rural is the balance. So we're having more people moving to urban settings, and that is actually creating a demand where water resources are not actually available. So we are taking it from faraway locations. And then we are also having issues where when you have a lot of housing areas, many factories are not allowed to be open in these locations. So they need to move to faraway locations. And some of them may end up in legal settings, and some may set up illegal premises where they pose a risk to our water resources. The underlying problem in this whole thing is we are actually having a low treated water reserve margin. An ideal treated water reserve margin is at about 20%, but we can still operate somewhere between 10 to 15. But the problem is we are now in Klang Valley operating below 5%. In some areas, it may not be even having any reserve margin. So when a disruption happens, we don't have assistance from nearby treatment plants to actually support the demand to reduce the impact of an incident, whether it's a pipe burst or a pollution.
Zooming in on the issue of pollution, how would you assess the government's actions to tackle it? Are government enforcement efforts up to the mark?
Well, setting up the Environmental Crimes Task Force, that was a good one. In fact, that was one of the requests we put forward in a letter we sent to the cabinet members last month. When we do environmental investigation, we are actually looking at things that, based on a chemical, we go backward, and then you have incidents like in Kim Kim pollution, you get a jaga and lorry driver being brought to case. I mean, these are not the actual culprits. There must be someone behind that. The issue is now we need expertise who look at crime, how a crime happens. So we need to treat environmental pollution not just as an incident, but actually a crime. These are issues where the task force will actually help. But in terms of enforcement, yes, we are really, really lacking in enforcement. The relationship between federal government and state government is very important when we look at enforcement. And for example, the local authorities, the DOE, Department of Environment, can actually train the local authority officers who are not trained in environment to actually assist them to collect information, to basically do spot checks on factories, whether they're legal or illegal. And to do good enforcement, we really need state-of-the-art technology. We need a database system. We need to put all of them in a link. We need to see how the chemical is moving, who is buying, who is using, and if this is a registered entity, then they can buy certain chemicals. If they are not a registered entity to do that particular process, then they cannot buy those chemicals. So there are many solutions and ideas and in fact methods has been put forward, but are they willing to take it up?
On your comments about the federal and state authorities, how should we understand their respective responsibilities when it comes to dealing with water pollution and enforcement?
Now, when it comes to water usage, it goes to federal. When it comes to pollution, it definitely goes to federal. But when it comes about land use, For example, if the land is gazetted to be an agricultural area or housing area, suddenly industrial premise crops up. So that is something that is illegal. So that falls under the state government. So there should be a sharing of responsibility, because we need to see the federal and state government as one entity to move together. If they keep operating as separate entity, you know, and create the divide, no, this is my turf and that's your turf, this is where complication will actually start. In fact, even in federal agency levels, there are so many turf fights. In my experience dealing with them, it is real, and some of them are very, very territorial.
Now, understandably, the public is really quite fed up with the frequency of the water cuts. How viable is the proposal for consumers to be compensated for these kinds of water supply disruptions?
There are a few suggestions. So what we have suggested, in fact, this was already almost a decade fight from us, from our side. We have been proposing to the government saying that when a pollution happens, there's a lot of affected party. Say if a river is polluted, obviously, in this case, we had all the treatment plants shut down. So the treated water part is also affected. But there's another party which is also affected, and we usually neglect them. That's the agricultural sector. So there is this fishery industry, and we also have plantations where they actually use raw water directly. They don't use treated water. So imagine these sort of chemicals going into our fish and shellfish and so forth, and we actually consume it back because of the food chain. What we have actually told to the government, add an additional clause in the Environment Quality Act to allow the victims of the pollution to claim for their losses. And to claim losses for businesses are quite simple, because all of them pay income tax. So from there, we can derive a number. For the domestic consumers, the water companies themselves can actually apply for compensation because there's a lot of emergency operations that they need to put forth to prevent a crisis to become worse. At the same time, there are also losses because consumers are put into a situation where they are not getting water. So they need to maybe carry water, they need to fetch extra water. It affects them in their day-to-day life. So these are the costs that the water company can claim and eventually credit back to the account holders. So this is a suggestion that we already put forward.
You mentioned there are other proposals. Why is your suggestion the better option?
There's another school of idea where they're saying that why don't we do a civil suit? You know, we sue the wrongdoer, but that will take time because you need to first prove the wrongdoer actually committed that offense. And another school of thought is saying that why don't we just sue the government agencies? I don't quite agree to that, because when you sue, it's not the minister or the Mantri Basar who's going to pay from their pocket. They're going to take our tax money. So it's better they enable this clause in the Environment Quality Act in the next parliament session and implement it by early next year. So the total cost that a polluter have to pay will actually go into millions. So this is where it will become a deterrent factor, because they will see they can go bankrupt if they do a pollution, you see.
Before we let you go, I would like to go back to something you mentioned earlier, which is the low water reserve margin in Selangor. How could we resolve this problem?
Actually, the immediate solution that we have in hand is the Langat 2 water treatment plant, which is supposed to be completed by 2019. The previous minister, Dr. Xavier, has mentioned that it's going to be delayed to 2022. And the current minister saying is going to go to 2023, which I feel it's ridiculous, because all these projects have a schedule. There should be an investigation why the delay is happening. And at the same time, now, treatment plant is one issue. The other part is reducing the non-revenue water. So in Selangor, non-revenue water is water that leaks in the system. So we are scoring at about 30%. Nationwide, it's about 35-36% of non-revenue water. So if you can bring this down, more water will be available to be supplied to the consumers. So there are many approaches. This is how we plan forward. So I'm actually baffled that these things are not being done properly. And every time we are just postponing the whole thing by another 2 years or 1 year.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Piara. That was S. Piara Pakaran, President of the Association of Water and Energy Research, shedding some light on the long fight that has clearly been had with the federal and state agencies on this problem. We've also been running a poll on this subject, asking you what immediate action would you like to see following the water disruptions in the Klang Valley?
The poll currently stands at 17%, want cash compensation, 48% want better enforcement, 33% want tighter legislation, 2.5% say other, and we've asked them to tell us what, and there are a few options here, including basically putting accountability towards the Chief Minister and the Dewan Undangan Negeri, as well as water collection and disposal being an issue, because if no one's addressing that, then maybe that's why this pollution ends up in the rivers.
Yes, so we'll be keeping a close watch on this subject, seeing as it is particularly affects the Klang Valley. But right now, we are about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin and then the Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Tarun Gupta, Managing Director of Dutch Lady Milk Industries Berhad. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.